Our nations repeated a unified message that we have sent the regime before. We will not accept a nuclear-armed North Korea.
A tough stance on North Korea in Vancouver. Somewhat less on the Korean DMV. This is Thursday, January 18th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. You are part of this program. Join us on VOA Asia Facebook. Also ahead, the U.S. ambassador to the United Nations has her say about Korea and lots more. North Korea will be sending hundreds of people to the Winter Olympics, including quite a few different types of musicians. And more violence in Myanmar leads to more death and concern for Rohingya refugees' health in Bangladesh. It's all on today's VOA Asia. The rival Koreas agreed Wednesday to form their first unified Olympic team and have their athletes parade together for the first time in 11 years during the opening ceremony of next month's Winter Olympics in South Korea. The agreements still require approval from the International Olympic Committee, but they are the most prominent steps toward rapprochement achieved by the Koreas since they recently began exploring cooperation during the Olympics following a year of heightened tension over the North's nuclear weapons program. During their third day of talks at the border in about a week, Seoul's unification ministry said senior officials reached a package of agreements, including fielding a joint women's ice hockey team and marching together under a blue and white unification flag depicting their peninsula in the opening ceremony. A joint statement distributed by the ministry said the North Korean Olympic delegation will travel to South Korea across their heavily fortified land border before the February 9th through the 25th Pyeongchang Games. It said the delegation will include a 230-member cheering group, a 30-member Taekwondo demonstration team, journalists, athletes, and officials. Ahead of the Olympics, the Koreas will hold a joint cultural event at the North Scenic Diamond Mountain and have non-Olympic skiers train together at the North's Masik Ski Resort. That according to a statement. It said the North also plans to send a 150-strong delegation to the Paralympics in March. The North earlier said it would send a 140-member art troupe as well. However, in Vancouver, Canada, Japan's Foreign Minister Taro Kono urged caution against the North's charm offensive. Kono was one of several senior officials attending the U.S.-Canadian-sponsored summit Tuesday on ways to strengthen economic and diplomatic pressure on Pyongyang over its nuclear and missile programs. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson of the United States was among them.
Our nations repeated a unified message that we have sent the regime before. We will not accept a nuclear-armed North Korea. All of us share one policy and one goal, and that is the complete, verifiable, and irreversible denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula. Our unity and our common cause with others in the region, particularly China and Russia, will remain intact despite North Korea's frequent attempts to divide us and sow dissension. Today, we discussed ways to further increase pressure on North Korea through more effective sanctions implementation and compliance, and countries came forward with proposals on how they intend to do that. We agree that the need for UN member states, especially China and Russia, to fully implement agreed-upon sanctions is essential to their success.
Tillerson warned the North Korean threat is growing and urged North Korea to choose the pathway of engagement, discussion, and negotiation. Neither China nor Russia attended the one-day meeting. China's foreign ministry said the Vancouver meeting showed a Cold War mentality that would only undermine a settlement. Atlantic Council senior fellow Robert Manning, who has written the tough talk coming out of the White House could yet trigger a war, wonders whether the thaw on the Korean Peninsula is the result of the pain sanctions are having in North Korea.
My guess is yes. From what I've seen, there was a report the other day that China's trade with North Korea is down 84% in the last few months. They have an informal economy that allows kind of markets to operate, but what are they selling? They're selling Chinese goods. Well, what if there's no Chinese goods? So I think that's starting to pinch on the elite. Maybe Kim is getting a little nervous.
Is there a possibility of ratcheting up the sanctions, perhaps maritime interdiction as one possibility?
Yes. In the last 2375, I believe it was the last UN Security Council resolution, the U.S. wanted to push for stronger interdiction, but didn't. And the way it's worded is you can request permission from the flag country to board a suspect ship. Now, most of North Korean ships are not under North Korean flags. They pay other countries to disguise them. And so we've been pressuring these other countries. So I think we're going to see increased interdiction. I think it's going to take a little more time to play out. And I think Secretary Tillerson is correct that we need to keep the pressure on. I'm not sure what this meeting in Vancouver accomplished. I'm a little concerned that China was not there. No matter what you're doing on North Korea, the most important cooperation you need is that of China.
Robert, UN Secretary General Guterres on Tuesday said he believes war over North Korea's nuclear weapons is avoidable, but he's concerned, not yet sure that peace is guaranteed. He called this a window of opportunity. Is that what you see?
I haven't seen a whole lot of opportunity. Most of what's going on is what I would call Olympics diplomacy. North Korea has made it very clear their nuclear weapons are off the table in these talks. It could turn into an opportunity, but we're not there yet, and there's no indication that there's been any change in North Korea's posture in terms of its weapons of mass destruction program.
You've written that President Trump's impatience could yet trigger a war, even though there's a short term so far, easing of tensions.
The rhetoric you're hearing out of the White House is troublesome because it's very similar to what we heard from the Bush administration prior to the Iraq War in 2002. Time is running out. Remember Condi Rice said we don't want to have to wait until there's a mushroom cloud and all this sort of thing. The best I can see, they are some distance from having an ICBM that's operational. And the sanctions should be allowed to have the time to be implemented.
Robert Manning pointed to Iran as an example where, after 2 years of global sanctions, it came to the negotiating table over its nuclear program. He said, unlike Iran, North Korea does not have the economic insulation of oil and gas exports, thus the pain might hit faster. These are among the top Asia stories trending on VOAnews.com. North and South Korea say they will march under a united flag in the Winter Olympics. Diplomats agree in Vancouver to increase pressure on North Korea. The U.S. ambassador to the United Nations says the Trump administration's Afghanistan strategy is working. Sources say a Taliban leader approved an Islamabad meeting on Afghanistan peace talks. And the Indian government says at least $125 billion are needed to fund India's renewables dream. Expanded coverage of these stories and more on Facebook at VOA Asia and on the VOAnews.com website. As you heard in our previous segment, South Korea says in addition to athletes, journalists, and officials, North Korea plans to send a 230-member cheering squad to South Korea during next month's Winter Olympics in Pyeongchang. Seoul's Unification Ministry says the two Koreas also discussed fielding a joint women's hockey team and conducting a joint march during the opening ceremony of the Pyeongchang Games. It says the talks will continue later on Wednesday. The North has said its delegation would also include officials, athletes, journalists, an art troupe, and a Taekwondo demonstration team. Now, as far as the entertainment portion of the North Korean delegation, in addition to the cheering squad, a symphony orchestra, it will most likely make the trip along with the North's all-girl pop group. This is what the Moribang Band sounds like. Yes, they are singing patriotic songs, exalting their great leader, but their repertoire does have some other fan favorites. VOA's Korean service has started an English-language TV program available online, also on satellite. The music portion of the Olympic delegation was discussed in the latest Washington Talk program. Frank Januzzi, president of the Mansfield Foundation, and Greg Scarlato of the Committee for Human Rights in North Korea were questioned by the show's moderator, Eun Jung Cho.
Well, you know, K-pop is very popular, not just in Korea, but in the United States and Japan, around the world. And I think that it's an example of South Korean soft power. And what you're seeing here maybe is a little bit of North Korea trying to play on that stage. Mm-hmm. There's a jealousy aspect. They want to compete in every dimension, whether it's at the Olympics mm-hmm. or in the popularity of their female pop bands. So I think this is Kim Jong-un wanting to appear on the world stage as a modern country.
Greg?
I think that this is also part of the forging of a new cult of personality for a new leader. Of course, Kim Jong-un's father, Kim Jong-il, had 20 years to prepare to become leader of North Korea in 1974-1994. He barely had 3 years. He was in a mad rush to establish his own power base. A lot of people got purged, hurt, tortured, killed in the process. Many senior officials as well. But there has also been an attempt to forge this cult of personality. Indeed, his birthday is not yet a big deal in the North Korean media. It's not celebrated on par with the birthdays of Kim Jong-il or Kim Il-sung. But North Korea is on its way to doing that and presenting him as a modern leader, fond of music that appears to be different, perhaps a little bit similar to what the South Koreans are doing, perhaps to what's done in the West. This is all part of forging a new image, a new cult of personality for a new and younger leader.
Joining us in the studio is the moderator of Washington Talk, Eun-Jung Cho. Eun-Jung, why has the VOA Korea Service decided to produce an English language program?
Well, we want to hear the views of American experts here in Washington, D.C., and obviously they don't speak any Korean, so that's why our main language during the show is English, because we need to speak to those experts here. And we also want to target, our main target are North Koreans, but at the same time, North Korea is such a big issue right now globally. Like, North Korea is the biggest threat to the international community. So we also want to reach out to non-Korean audiences around the world.
Okay, that's the focus of your program. How can somebody find it? I mean, it's a pretty new show, right? So is it voanews.com? How can somebody find it online?
It is voakorea.com online, and we're also on YouTube, and we're also on Facebook, and we also go through satellite around the world.
Very good. And what's coming up in the next week's show or so? It's once a week, right?
It's once a week, so we choose the major North Korea news of the week and have two American experts come in and discuss it. This week, it's going to be the foreign minister's meeting on North Korea that was held in Canada, Vancouver this week, and also the military options that the U.S. government is currently considering against North Korea.
Eun-Jung Cho is the moderator of Washington Talk, an English language program from the VOA Korean Service. Good luck. It's a great show.
Thank you, Ira.
Happening now in Asia, China's transport ministry says preparations are underway to send a robot submarine, possibly followed by divers, to explore and plug holes in a sunken Iranian oil tanker whose 32 crew members are all believed to have died. The Shanghai Maritime Search and Rescue Center and a Hong Kong newspaper on Wednesday say authorities will send larger salvage vessels to support the operation. The report says an expanding slick from its cargo of natural gas is being monitored for potential environmental damage. Stay up to date with VOA. This is VOA Asia. Seven people have been shot dead by police in Myanmar's troubled Rakhine State. Officials say at least 4,000 people surrounded a government building late Tuesday in the town of Mok U, shortly after an annual ceremony marking the end of the Arakan Kingdom more than two centuries ago. Tin Mong Sui, the regional governor, says police attempted to get the crowd to disperse by firing warning shots using rubber bullets. When they refused to comply, the crowd began attacking the soldiers, and the security forces opened fire again, this time using real ammunition. In addition to the seven dead, 13 others were injured in the shooting. The shooting victims are reported to be Buddhist, not Rohingya. Human rights group Amnesty International called for an independent investigation into the lethal use of force. Meanwhile, the UN Children's Fund warns more than 500,000 Rohingya refugee children in Cox's Bazar, Bangladesh, are at risk of disease outbreaks, leading to many deaths during the upcoming cyclone and monsoon season. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Bangladesh gets battered by tropical storms during two seasons every year. Aid agencies in Cox's Bazar are looking ahead with dread toward the first cyclone and monsoon season, which begins in March and lasts through July. They warn more than 650,000 Rohingya refugees living in overcrowded, squalid, makeshift settlements are totally unprepared to deal with the extensive storm damage and destruction that is likely to occur. UN Children's Fund spokesman Christophe Bouillirac says the health and safety of hundreds of thousands of children already living in horrific conditions will be at increased risk. He says the monsoon season will bring with it disease, flooding, landslides, and further displacement.
What is already a dire humanitarian situation for the 520,000 children now living in the region of Cox's Bazar can become a catastrophe with cyclone and monsoon in a few weeks.
Aid officials say unsafe water, inadequate sanitation, and poor hygiene can lead to devastating disease outbreaks and a worsening of existing infections and deaths from cholera and diphtheria. They say stagnant pools of water can attract malaria-carrying mosquitoes. UNICEF says keeping the Rohingya refugee children safe from disease is an absolute priority. It reports efforts are being made to provide access to safe water and sanitation and to vaccinate children against the spread of killer diseases such as diphtheria. But it warns this is likely not to be enough to ward off the worst impacts caused by extreme weather. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
This news alert from VOA Asia. U.S. President Donald Trump said Wednesday Russia is helping North Korea get supplies in violation of international sanctions and that Pyongyang is getting closer every day to being able to deliver a long-range missile to the U.S. Federal judge Wednesday signaled she may extend an order preventing the deportation of roughly 50 Indonesian Christians living illegally in New Hampshire, a process that immigration officials began after President Trump took office. Visit VOA Asia Facebook every day for top stories and great features to see and share. This is VOA Asia. Let's go back now to our top story about the situation surrounding the two Koreas. VOA contributor Greta Van Susteren sat down in New York City Wednesday with Nikki Haley, the U.S. ambassador to the United Nations.
Ambassador, I want to first talk about North Korea. The news is that North Korea, DPRK, and South Korea are going to walk together at the Olympics under that one flag. Your thoughts about that?
I think it's good that North Korea and South Korea are talking. But we shouldn't be misled by the fact that just because they've had talks about the Olympics and this is going to happen, that that's going to take away the dangerous side of North Korea. Until they actually stop the ballistic missile testing, until they actually show that they are willing to denuclearize, we have to be very careful. They've done these talks before. That's what stalled it for all these years. We have to make sure that they're about action and that that action is to completely stop all the nuclear activity that they're doing.
Well, apparently it's even going a little further that there's going to be a hockey team jointly between North Korea and South Korea.
I think that's fine. I think if they want to do that, that's fine. But it doesn't stop the international pressure from everyone that is telling North Korea to stop. So, you know, they can go and have those regional cooperation on that level, but at the end of the day, we still have nuclear missiles in North Korea that they continue to test and they continue to threaten the United States and the world with. And so we're going to keep that at the forefront.
Do you think that this is sort of a divide and conquer and this is sort of some motive behind Kim Jong-un? It's not just that he has an interest in the Olympics and sort of unification of the peninsula, that there is some sort of message to the U.S.?
I think this is a distraction. I think this is doing what North Korea has always done, which is when things get hot, start talking. But the problem is we're not going to play the same game we've always played. We're not going to just talk and think that they've suddenly seen seen their ways and seen the way out. They have to tell us they're going to stop with the testing. We have to see that the testing actually stops, and then we have to know that they're going to eliminate the program.
Or else. I mean, if they don't. I mean, we've had agreements before with North Korea.
Right.
That they have cheated on. We've got a situation where they've managed to sort of navigate around sanctions. They've had some countries that have penetrated sanctions. What is the or else? I mean, if they, I heard President Obama say we're not going to let North Korea become a nuclear nation. I've heard people in the current president's administration say that they are a nuclear nation. They've got a nuclear weapon. They just haven't figured out how to deliver it. So where are we on this?
But we're not comfortable with them being a nuclear nation, and we never will.
So what do we do?
The reckless.
So what are we doing?
Look, just because North and South Korea are holding hands today doesn't mean that that threat has gone away. The United States and the international community is going to keep up the pressure on North Korea to totally disband, until that time, we're going to wait and make sure there's no activity, no testing. But when that time comes, we will decide at that point. But all the cards are actually in North Korea's hands on how we respond. So if they do the right thing, we're happy to work with them. If they don't, we've got options on the table.
It is interesting, I think for the first time, correct me if I'm wrong, you were actually able, or the United States, and you're the ambassador to the UN here, to get China and Russia to go with sanctions on North Korea. How did that come about?
You know, we've done three resolutions now, and I think it was the largest sanctions bill that had ever been on a country, and I think that what we had to do was show the threat and show that the threat was real, and then also show that the fact that North Korea would not be doing this ballistic missile testing if they didn't have the money to do it. They're not using revenue to feed their people. They're using the revenue to build the weapons to do these tests. And so what we said was we've got to cut off the revenue stream. And so now you see 90% of the trade's been cut off, over a third of the oil's been cut off, multiple trade issues have stopped, investments have stopped. But it's all about making sure they don't have enough money to continue the nuclear program.
So you think Kim Jong-un is just going to say, okay, we don't have any money, so we're going to stop?
We don't know what he's going to do. But we can't be okay with just saying, you know, he's never going to go there. I mean, this is a real threat to the United States, so we have to take it seriously. We have to keep the pressure on. There's no relaxing from the United States standpoint.
What about the false alarm? We had the one in Hawaii just recently, and now Japan. What's the United States going to, you know, what are we going to do to combat that? We can't keep sending false alarms out to people.
I think it's terrifying. I mean, it's absolutely terrifying for the people on the ground that get those. But I also think that the administration is going to do everything they can to make sure all of that is in place and working properly. And those are the things that we have to continue to check up on and continue to make sure they don't happen.
Greta Van Susteren's interview with Ambassador Haley was wide-ranging. You can hear and see the entire interview at voanews.com. The ambassador, Ms. Haley, was very busy. She talked about many issues at the UN. Haley said the Trump administration's policy in Afghanistan is working. The president's Afghan plan involves shifting from a time-based approach to fighting America's longest war to emphasize linking U.S. assistance to concrete results and cooperation from the Afghan government. This news alert from VOA Asia. Japanese public broadcaster NHK said Wednesday that an erroneous alert about a North Korean missile fired at Japan was sent by a staff member who meant to transmit a different news flash. NHK denied any mechanical flaws, said it was studying preventative measures. All the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Attempting to open sealed age-old books and documents without damaging them is difficult. Now scientists in Switzerland have perfected an X-ray technique to read the fragile records without even touching them. VOA's Deborah Block explains.
Without opening this carefully sealed document, researchers at the Swiss Federal Institute of Technology use X-ray tomography to scan each page. Nearly 700 years after being written, the small 14th century document is revealing its secrets.
It is in the year 1351. A young lady from Venice, Catherine Savonario, wrote her testament. And then the testament was sealed and remained sealed for all these many centuries.
The technology will be used to build an open digital system in the state archives of Venice.
Not only small documents, but most of the items are huge volumes, the size of a table, and so we must be able in the future to look inside them.
Many of the documents are extremely fragile and warped or weathered by time.
We need a non-invasive technique to read inside them. X-ray machine and X-ray tomography is the solution. Thanks to the use for thousands of years of iron galhings, we can read them using X-rays.
The researchers have their work cut out for them. The archives contains a huge amount of records documenting some 1,000 years of history. They cover a massive 80 kilometers of shelves. Deborah Block, VOA News.
On Nice Music, we come to an end of VOA Asia. Get our program on iTunes and SoundCloud. Download our podcast. Take VOA Asia with you. Find us at voanews.com. Let's hear from you, VOA Asia Facebook, and our email, voaasia@voanews.com. Thanks for joining us. Thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, our engineer, Carl Starling, our managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team of Jim Stevenson, David Byrd, and Skylar Ogden. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Have a great day.